We present My Word. A panel game devised by Tony Schran and Edward J. Mason. And here to introduce the teams is John Julius Norwich.
Thank you, Liz Powell, Antonia Fraser, Frank Muir, and Dennis Norden. And we go straight into the first round, which, as usual, probes their vocabulary. Frank, for 2 marks, what is the meaning of the word allopath?
Allopath, A-double-L-O-P-A-T-H. Well, sir, path means somebody who's suffering. For instance, psychopath. Means somebody who's seen Hitchcock's film 19 times on television and is screaming when he sees Psycho again. Well, allopath is somebody allergic to British films of the 40s. It consists of policemen saying,
It's the opposite to a homeopath. A homeopath cures you by a tiny little dose of your disease or whatever it is that you're suffering from. An allopath cures it by inducing another action of a completely different kind.
What fun.
They love it. I'm afraid I can't give you any marks for that one. However, better luck next time. Antonia, can you please tell me the meaning of the word supererogation?
It sounds rather like the beginning of supercalifragilisticexpialidocious, which I can't remember what that means, if it meant anything. Anyway, it's obviously to do with asking, rogation. Super means doing it an inordinate amount.
I've only ever heard it in the phrase a work of supererogation, and I've taken it always by the context to mean sort of gilding the lily, doing a little bit too much, something that's unnecessary, and laying it on a bit.
Yes, I think that's basically right. Originally, actually, the real basic meaning of it is theological. It means performing extra good works that you don't really need to do because you'll get to heaven without. Sort of laying on an unnecessary credit balance with the recording angel just in case things go wrong on Judgment Day. But from that, obviously, it comes to mean a work of supererogation is something you don't really need to do, but you just sort of do a little bit extra in case of accidents. I'll give you 1 mark for that. Dillis, tell me, please, what is a nepenthe?
I think it's a drink.
Yes?
It's what I need now, a very soothing drink. It could be a sleeping draught.
It could, and indeed it is. Say no more. Go no further. A sleeping draught is exactly that. Dennis, would you like to blunge? And if so, could you tell me what it is precisely that you would like to do?
It's one of the most sensuous experiences that it's possible to feel. It's plunging naked into a bowl of blancmange.
Oh, dear. The agony of this job is not being able to give the marks one would like to give. I'll give you a half.
There's absolutely no clue in the word at all. I've never heard it.
It's one of those fine, basic old Anglo-Saxon words.
Not one of those fine, basic words. No, it's one of the other basic old, you know.
In this particular case, in fact, it comes from pottery making. If you were a potter, you would know exactly what to blunge means. It means to mix together clay and other ingredients with water by revolving machinery.
Good. Well, next.
Before we go, then, into round two, here are the quotations you were given for the last round. Frank, your quotation is, "Oh, for the touch of a vanished hand," by Tennyson, as I need hardly remind you. Break, break, break. Dennis, yours is, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. And now we go on to a round called Odd Man Out. For 2 marks, Frank, can you please identify from the following groups the word that does not, by its meaning or its nature, conform to the others? Now, Mars, Odin, Julius Caesar, and Augustus Caesar.
Mars, Odin, and Julius Caesar are all concerned with war and the pursuit of war. And Augustus is concerned with devotion to the arts.
No. Augustus fought hard.
Well,
he was very concerned with war as well. Much more so, I should have thought, even than Odin.
Augustan age. Odin's the odd man out, because my friend says so.
I'll give you 1 mark for Odin. No, the answer is that the other three all gave their names to months. March, July, and August. Odin gave his name to Wednesday, but Wednesday is not a month, as you know. And Odin is, therefore, the odd man out. Antonia, Ronald Coleman, Che Guevara, Imperial, Toothbrush, and Handlebar.
Well, the clue is clearly a moustache. Isn't an Imperial whiskers?
Beard.
An Imperial is not whiskers,
it's
no.
Sort of beard. I mean, is that the odd one out?
You're perfectly right. Imperial is the odd one out. It's not whiskers, but it is indeed a shorter beard. It's a little, almost a goatee beard, only a little bit longer than that. It's what the Emperor Napoleon III used to wear, a nice little sort of trimmed, pointed job. Dillis, butcher, electric, navy, sage, and Oxford.
Well, now.
Are they all blues except butcher?
Are they? Butcher's blue.
Is it?
But there's butcher blue, electric blue, navy blue.
Sage.
There's no sage blue. Sage is the one.
Oxford blue.
They're blue. All blues except sage.
All blues except sage, which is green.
Which is green.
Well done. 2 marks. Dennis, James Joyce, grass snakes, Waterford Crystal, and a bottle of Guinness.
Waterford Crystal and a bottle of Guinness. Ah. Yeah. James Joyce, Waterford, and Guinness all have associations with Ireland. Grass snakes have associations with Ireland, but in a kind of negative way. Weren't they driven out of Ireland, all the snakes?
They were indeed. They were driven out of Ireland by...
St. Patrick.
Perfectly right. Mm. Now, a round of literary addition. For 2 marks, Frank, please, supply the missing numerals from the following phrases, and then add them together and tell me the total. Days thou shalt labour.
6.
The Orange Pips of Sherlock Holmes. And grey geese in a green field grazing.
3. But don't you sit there? I have never heard of Sherlock Holmes and Orange Pips. I'll be very afraid of you, John Jones.
You have.
I could do nothing less.
All right. Well, you were able to tell me the number of days I should labour, and you were able to tell me the number of grey geese.
It is 3, isn't it?
It is indeed 3.
Ah.
The only one you couldn't do was the Orange Pips.
Could I have a guess?
Yes.
1,422,809.
Very, very close.
Oh.
The answer's 5. And the total was 14, but I'll give you 1 mark. Antonia. Miles meandering with a mazy motion.
5.
Lords a leaping.
Seven.
Go start it from the top.
Yes. And the partridge, that's the bottom actually, a partridge and a partridge.
I'll give you the third one.
Yeah.
The Cornishman who'll know the reason why.
20,000 plus five, which I make. Oh my God, I was going to say 25,000, but forget it.
You're not doing your housekeeping now.
No. I think it's. In spite of this cooperation on my right, I think it's seven lords are leaping.
Well, I'm afraid it's not. If you think of all the leaping lords you know, you will, in fact, I think, find that they number 12.
Oh, dear, and I could hear people murmuring.
5 miles meandering with amazing motion, 12 lords leaping, 20,000 Cornishmen, total 20,017. Still, you were nearly right. I'll give you one mark.
Thank you very much.
Dillis. Blackbirds baked in a pie, sheets in the wind, and Frenchmen who can't be wrong.
Blackbirds, 4 and 20 blackbirds.
Yes.
4 and 20. 24 blackbirds. Sheets, is it three sheets in the wind? Yeah, you're a naval type, you know.
Yes, three sheets in the wind.
Three sheets.
And three sheets, perfectly right. And the Frenchman who can't be wrong.
Dennis whispered 40 million. And
did he?
He wouldn't fool he would, me.
You sure you wouldn't lie to us? No,
I don't think it's 40 million.
40 million? Yes. Well, that's 40 million.
You're not 40 million.
You're going nap on 40 million, are you? 40 million is what you're going nap on.
Well, again,
you're only 10 million out. It's 50 million. 24 blackbirds, three sheets in the wind, 50 million Frenchmen, total 50 million and 27.
Well.
Dennis.
Right.
Men on the dead man's chest.
15 men.
The tailors of Dorothy Sayers.
Nine tailors.
And the mileage from Wibbleton to Wobbleton.
X. It's 24 plus X. I only know it in kilometres or kilometres or whatever you're supposed to say.
Well,
do you know the Wibbleton to Wobbleton?
Say it in kilometres, and if it works out more or less right, you can have the mark.
I haven't the faintest. I've never heard the. I don't know the allusion at all.
Well, the allusion, in fact, it's believe it or not, it's a nursery rhyme. You'll find it in the Oxford Book of English Nursery Rhymes. It goes, it's 15 miles from Wibbleton to Wobbleton. From Wibbleton to Wobbleton is 15 miles. It's 15 miles from Wibbleton to Wobbleton. From Wibbleton to Wobbleton is 15 miles. Total, 39. Mm. One mark. A rhyme now entitled What Comes Before. This is to test your Shakespearean knowledge. Frank, now for two marks, what line of Shakespeare comes before this line? When the moon shone, we did not see the candle.
We went all serious when you said that.
I have to be when I recite Shakespeare.
When the moon shone,
we did not see the candle.
It's going to run through Shakespeare in my mind. What's the significant bit?
At a given moment, somebody says, I'm not going to tell you who, because that might give the game away a little bit too much, says how far that little candle throws his beams.
Ah, yes.
That's a good deed.
It's like a good deed in a naughty world.
Well done.
It's from what the actors call The Merchant.
It's from The Merchant. You're perfectly right. It's from The Merchant. And I had to give you a bit of a hint, but I'll give you 1.5 marks. Antonia, the line that comes immediately before, deny thy father and refuse thy name.
Of course it's Romeo and Juliet.
Of course.
I think it goes something like this. Romeo, Romeo, wherefore art thou Romeo?
Perfectly right. Two extremely well-deserved marks. Dillis, the line that comes before, this bad begins and worse remains behind.
It's Macbeth.
It's not.
It's not Macbeth. Well.
What? Can we do it again, sir?
Yes.
This
bad begins and worse remains behind.
This bad begins and worse.
It's Sorry, do.
I give you another clue. It's from Hamlet.
Oh.
Do you know?
No, of course
not. You don't know? I'll tell you.
No, I don't.
I'll tell you.
I don't know.
You'll kick yourself when you hear it.
Shall we?
I must be cruel only to be kind. Dennis. That all with one consent praise newborn gawds. G-A-W-D-S, meaning that which is gaudy.
I don't think I'll waste your time with this.
No, this one doesn't rhyme.
No, and it doesn't.
Troilus and Cressida.
Troilus and Cressida is I'm not at my best in.
You don't know it. It's one touch of nature makes the whole world
kin.
Kin. Well done. Yeah. But I'm afraid I can't give you any marks. Now then, a round of double definitions. For 2 marks, what single word can be defined by the 2 following different definitions? Frank, querulously to criticize, and a jumbo-sized goldfish.
Well.
I don't think whaling is quite criticizing querulously.
Carp,
on the other hand, is. Well done. 2 marks. Antonia, a small fishing boat and a manually applied rebuke.
Can I do it?
Yes, you can.
Smack.
Smack is right. Well done. An extra 2 marks. Dillis, to set on fire and a collection of kittens.
Do you know?
Piece of brazen. A piece of brazen help being given from the audience. I will give you 0.5 mark for the sheer gall where you just turned around and asked the audience to get your points for you. But 0.5 mark, I'm afraid, is all you'll get. A kindle of kittens is the right answer. Dennis, harmoniously agreeable and an alphabetical element. The initial letter is C.
Oh, it's a word.
Which is also that particular form of alphabet.
Consonant.
Consonant is right. 2 marks, you score. And so now we come to the last round, and Frank and Dennis's quotations. Marks, as usual, will be awarded on the length of the applause from the audience here in the theatre. And Frank, ready? Your quotation is, "Oh, for the touch of a vanished hand."
It was terribly difficult for me because it's Fred, you see. It's Fred, the chap who comes and gardens on Friday mornings. The other guy was swan-necked hoe. He's in a rock about 10 inches wide with a beautiful swan neck and a long wooden handle. He said, "There's nothing like it for the weeds. Get in among the weeds with it." I said, "I can buy you. Of course I can buy you one." And he looked at me narrowly again, as though he didn't think I could. I seem to have let the man down. Isn't that an uncomfortable feeling you have? I think it was perhaps the occasion of the hose pipe. He wanted to water the shrubs, and we've got a borehole and an electric motor, which is sort of round the corner of the house. And Fred paid up the hose and asked me if I'd kindly switch on the electric motor at the top of the borehole, you see, because it was a long way and he wanted to hold the end of the hose. And it was had one of those plastic fasteners where the sort of female, the socket, is on the hose and the other bit's on the square. And he couldn't get the bit off to put it on. He couldn't get it onto the square. So he shoved the hose down the back of his trousers. Meanwhile, I was round the side of him waiting for his command, you see. Apparently what he said, trying to get this thing on, was, "Done it! On!" You see, now, when you're waiting for instructions, standing by a switch, and you hear, "Done it! On!" you see, naturally I turn it on. Vague muscle, weird sound. It sort of ballooned out of the water down the back of his trousers and sort of filled his trousers and his gumboots and knocked. He looked like an old Dutchman. So ever since then, he's had this strange way of looking at me as though he doesn't trust me. So when Fred said to me, "Can you get this swan neck out?" I said, "Of course I can." "Are you sure?" "Of course." Have you ever tried to buy a swan-necked home? They have ceased to exist. They're no longer made. I went along to this place in Bedford. Bedford near a lovely airport, which actually makes homes of gardening implements. It's gardening engineering. She said, don't call for them anymore, sir. Don't have them. It's the Dutch home you want. And he produced me this frightful thing. It was clad in plastic. And it had a bright blue plastic handle. And the blade, instead of being nice dull metal, just aching for the file to sharpen it, and just going rusty where it's been welded onto the handle, was a very, very nasty sort of thing, varnished on the edge, which goes into the earth. Really. But I had to buy it, just all the way, and I've got a fixed friend tomorrow, and he wanted a home for the British craftsman of a swan-neck charm. What do I give him? Well, in the words of Tennyson, hoe for the Dutch of a varnished end.
Dennis, now, let's see how you get on with you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink.
Well, do you find it as touching as I do that despite all the honours and tokens of public acclaim that have been heaped upon Frank Muir, some of them from a great height, despite all those, the one honour he most avidly craves is the one that has always eluded him? I'm talking about is seeing his name in the Guinness Book of Records. Now, I must admit, when he first told me about that, I found that secret wish of his so moving, I straight away went out, bought a copy of the book, studied it, then came back and reported to him. It seems to me, I said, that the way most people in there qualified for entry was by managing to do something either faster or longer or more often than anyone had ever done that before, like Fyodor Vasilet of Moscow, who fathered 69 children, or Don Carter of Hill McCoy High School, Michigan, who by use of quite different skills balanced on one foot for 8 hours, 46 minutes. So I said to Frank, if you could now beat any of those records. Now, Frank thought about that for a couple of minutes. He said, how many children did you say that Russian fellow had? I said, 69, but seeing that you've already got to, your target figure is really only 68. That's true, he said. Is it? The only trouble is, could I manage it in time to get into the next edition? So out came the book again, and we looked for some other feats of skill and endurance that he might possibly have a chance of bettering. And the one that seemed in every way the least strenuous was the record set up by Mr. Crosby of Harrogate, who earned his inclusion by spitting a cherry stone 42 feet 5.5 inches from a sitting position. Consequently, there and then, I went out, bought 2 pounds of cooking cherries. Well, it seemed a bit extravagant to buy the eating ones just for spitting out purposes. And then Frank settled himself with them in a comfortable armchair while I stood by with a tape measure. Well, something we both learned is that long-distance cherry stone spitting is not as easy as it sounds. In the first place, perhaps Frank shouldn't even have considered making his attempt on the spitting record while seated inside the Savile Club. At any rate, that seems to be the opinion of the membership committee. Secondly, it could be that this particular activity should never really be even attempted by someone who has any kind of bridge work in his mouth. 3 times I had to dash out into Brook Street and retrieve it from under a taxi. And thirdly, I didn't even know there was such an ailment as dislocation of the tongue. Well, I telephoned the former athletics champion who's been editing the Guinness Book of Records now since 1955, Mr. Norris McWhirter, invited him out to an absolutely slap-up dinner. Tell me, Mr. McWhirter, I said, would you be prepared to compromise your principles by including the name of a man who's established what you might call a sort of world record? He looked at me suspiciously. What do you mean, a sort of record? He said. Well, I said, isn't it in itself a record to have made more unsuccessful attempts to get into the Guinness Book of Records than anyone else on record? Would you credit that despite all that expensive food and drink I'd poured down him, that man refused to bend his rules one tiny bit? Which only goes to show how true that old proverb is. You can feed a Norris McWhirter, but you cannot make him think.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, according to your applause, Frank wins the story, but Dennis and Antonia are the overall winners. And so now it's goodbye from Dennis Powell, Antonia Fraser, Frank Muir, and Dennis Norden.
In my work, the chairman was John Julius Norwich. The questions were compiled by Peter Moore, and the program was produced by Tony Schreier.